Welcome to Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. I'll bring you all kinds of stories from all kinds of people. Whether it's a live public conversation and we're speaking from the kitchen table of my 1965 Beeline travel trailer, from the studios or on the streets, please sit back and enjoy the conversation right here this time every week. Trailer Talks, the Marcellus Shell Water Project, is a combination of live events, sound pieces, radio broadcasts, home movies, and an evolving interactive website that you're welcome to participate in. We're exploring the impact of natural gas drilling on New York's water resources and the issues being debated in our neighborhoods throughout the country and globally. What is guiding people's decisions about whether or not to lease their land for gas drilling? And at what point do the rights of the individual diminish in the face of the health of an entire area? What role does water itself have on the ability for an area to survive by providing for itself? What impact is this having not only on the communities in the shale regions, but also on the national dialogue and policymaking decisions around energy extraction? What defines the American dream, and how does it impact the decisions being made in our communities? Trailer Talk's Marcellus Shale Water Project explores the impact of natural gas drilling in our neighborhoods. Local culture, generations of history, and beloved homes can be lost when the oil and gas companies, intent on fossil fuel extraction, move into a new region. We're facing a complete shift in our region as this largest ever concentration of gas lies in wait beneath our feet. Please go to www.trailertalk.net and talk to us. David Sager, Sullivan County legislator, is running for New York State Senate, and he is opposed to hydrofracking for natural gas. He supports a moratorium so thorough studies can be done. He feels strongly about protecting his community and the 42nd District, which encompasses Sullivan, Ulster, parts of Orange and Delaware counties. And what's interesting about this New York State Senate campaign, this race with David Sager and incumbent John Bonasek, is that Sager's campaign is that the catalyst for Sager's campaign is natural gas drilling in this region. Incumbent Senator John Bonasek has agreed to join Trailer Talk to have a conversation with me about natural gas drilling in the region, too. Since home is a place of refuge, sanctuary, and comfort for me, the fight to protect it is essential. What defines the American dream, and how does it shape an election? Trailer Talk's Marcellus Shale Water Project Food and Fuel is exploring the impact that natural gas drilling is having in our neighborhoods. So I will continue to speak to people in our communities and welcome you to join in this conversation. What's happening in your neighborhood with oil and gas extraction? With the companies showing up, have they come to your backyard already, whether on the Pacific Coast or in the heart of Los Angeles, California? Perhaps they are in Dimock or Hickory, Pennsylvania, or the invasion has begun in upstate New York. Has your ability to feel safe and secure in your home been taken away by the oil and gas industries? I'm thinking of my neighbors who, because of the leased land surrounding them for gas drilling and the threat to safety, to clean air and water, to the potential for devastating health impacts, have either already left or are getting ready to leave because of the gas company invasion. Where will they go? And I'm looking at the people fighting back. David Sager joined Trailer Talk for a conversation about his campaign and natural gas drilling at a home in Bethel, New York, on June 25th. Well, thank you, Dave Sager. Thank you so much for joining me and to talk about your Senate campaign here in New York State. This is Sullivan County, New York. We're in Bethel. If you could share with me why you decided to run and what platform you're running with for this campaign.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate that you're here and that I can be here with you. The primary reason that I entered the race for the 42nd State Senate District is because of the hydrofracking issue, natural gas exploration in the Marcellus Shale Formation. I've been highly critical since 2008 when these issues first started to rear their heads within this region. And as a sitting county legislator for Sullivan County, I've probably been the most vocal locally or regionally elected official on the subject. It's something I'm passionate about. It's something that I felt that my opponent was extremely irresponsible about up until maybe within the last couple of days.
And but, you're talking about the incumbent, Senator John Bonasek, who yes. is Republican. You're running as a Democrat.
Yes.
So, yes, so recently, just I think within 48 hours.
Absolutely. Suddenly there's been a statement by my opponent that he would, I believe, that wouldn't allow permitting unless the DEC said it was safe, essentially. Now, that leaves for a lot of gray area because John's track record would certainly say otherwise on the issue. And I don't know exactly what that means because, unfortunately, from what I've seen since 2008, the DEC hasn't exactly been the leader on an mm-hmm. environmental concern on this issue. In fact, in 2008, I remember getting into several heated discussions with Mineral Resources Director Brad Field at public forums when they still thought it was okay to have open fracking pits and without really any regulation over even the open fracking pit being in a flood zone. It was really very scary when I was going to these meetings and listening to what was coming out of the mouth of these people. These are the same people that really strongly protect our rivers and streams and have been resistant to letting anyone in terms of flood mitigation issues, but yet would turn around and allow this kind of environmental degradation to occur with really limited oversight. So I have concerns as to really what John means by these statements and where that goes, essentially, because it seems to me the bureaucratic leaders of the DEC and in Albany are supportive to an extent of drilling. And yet what's interesting is that the union that represents the bulk of the DEC employees stated last year that the SGEIS should have been completely scrapped and redone, yet none of those bureaucrats want to revisit that issue. So you know, when John wants to say that it's going to be based on science, which are all terms that have only come out of his mouth since I've entered the race, I really strongly question what he means by that, because most people that work for the DEC have a biology background, and there's, I'm sure, right. some pretty well-educated people in the field. And when that union stands forth of some 2,000 workers and says, you know, you've got it wrong, redo it, and the bureaucrats say, yeah. no, it's just fine. There's some issues there.
Okay, so let's talk about the issues. You speak about 2 years ago now, you became very concerned, and it was roughly 2 years ago right. that the shale pounced upon the area. It's seemingly so. And a lot of us had to do homework very quickly about natural gas drilling, potential impacts, talking to people from different areas where it's happened. So for you, if you could then bring us up to right now, we're at a fundraising event for your campaign, and talk about what the catalyst was for you and why you felt you needed to run.
There were very strong indications that Mr. Bonasek was kind of adopting the slogan of drill, baby, drill, and really wasn't listening to some of the environmental concerns when people were coming to Albany to speak with him about the subject. And as a county legislator, once a year we go to what's called the New York State Association of Counties Conference, which is held at the Desmond Hotel in February in Albany. And it was a very clear agenda that you could see coming out of that. Now, Mr. Bonasek wasn't there, but there were several other Republican elected officials at the state level, state senators, as well as every Republican county legislator that was involved in the Marcellus Shale play throughout that region.
Okay, and Dave Sager, let me just stop here sure, for a minute, because sure. you were a Republican.
I know. So and that was what was the most scary
yes,
to me, is
okay.
because I went up there, and the only people that were talking on the side of caution were myself and County Treasurer Ira Cohen, both from Sullivan County, and two Democratic legislators from Tompkins County, were both females. And it really just blew my mind that the party that I was already having a lot of difficulty being a part of was so clearly on an agenda to shove this down our throats, regardless of the environmental and social concerns. And that became the biggest catalyst for me, because I realized that this was their agenda, and it was, damn the torpedoes kind of mentality that they didn't want to hear, because I kept bringing up different instances, as did these other legislators, and it was a group of four against a room full of staunch, mm-hmm. Republican legislators, and it's not to, unfortunately, it gets pitted one party against the other, but the reality was is you could see a clear agenda, and that was their MO, and that really scared me, because they didn't want to hear about any kind of environmental concerns. It was solely about their immediate pocketbooks. And there's a lot of vagueness to what's going on in terms of New York and the Marcellus Shale Basin. There are too many variables out there.
What are some of these variables that you're talking about?
Firstly, I've consistently been on the side of saying that we need a moratorium until the EPA study is concluded. Now, prior studies from the EPA, clearly there have been whistleblowers that say that it's been industry-oriented, okay? So we need something that's going to be objective, and it mm-hmm. needs to be proven that it's going to be environmentally sound, because I believe in the future, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say this, that water is going to be our biggest commodity in the future.
Well, yes. I brought this here, and this is disturbing. This
absolutely
comes out of somebody's well. It's polluted water. It's from Dimock, Pennsylvania, and I took a trip there myself in the wintertime, and to listen to what people are saying who were very hopeful that this would be wonderful for them, and it hasn't been.
No, and I think in a lot of regions throughout the country, you'll hear that same story over and over again, despite what the industry tries to cover it up with. They can try to dress it up,
right?
But you can dress up a pig, it's still a pig, and it doesn't look very good from most angles, and it's a problem. And I happen to live in an agricultural community where some of the surrounding farms would love to lease their land. Now, I own 3 acres of land, and we bought that 3 acres of land because we knew the home. We were friends with the people that owned the home previously. We know that it has exceptional well water. It has a great big front yard, and I have two little boys, ages 7 and 5, and all I've ever wanted to do is raise them in peace and have mm-hmm. have a nice surrounding and environment for them to grow up in. And this threatens the very core of what, I spend a great deal of money and energy to assure my children of a quality life in the country. So it hits very close to home for me. And when you look at statistically, most of the leased land is owned by a very small percentage of the population.
What is the percent right now?
I don't know it specifically in Sullivan County, the percentage of land that's leased, but I'll have to get that information. But typically, take Tompkins County, where those two legislators we sided with at the NYSAC convention. At that time, they said about 40% of their land was leased by about 6% of the population.
Right, I've heard that too.
And the highest percentage I've heard is one county said that about 80% of the land was leased by 20% of the population. Because certainly if you doubled the 40%, that comes out to 12%. So if you can say a range from 12 to 20, that's still unacceptable, because we weren't a society based on those with the most land get to have the most say. We're a society based on one person, one vote. It's called democracy. When land-rich people get to control a democracy, when they're in the distinct population minority, there's a problem.
That's a great point that you're making, Dave. And also, what about agricultural usage for land and the benefits that are given to agricultural land, and what happens if then that usage changes and it becomes an industrialized site and no longer can any kind of farming happen?
I've actually been arguing this point quite a bit, and brought it up before it was in vogue to even discuss it, and some farmers can get upset with it, but the first thing that I'd like to dispel is the fact that the industry and those that are purely pro gas drilling are saying that this is going to be a boom for farmers and this is going to save the farming industry. Couldn't be further from the truth. This, and they need to be separated. The debate needs to be separated, because this is purely not an agriculture venture. This is purely industrial. Now, on leased property, where you're going to have this huge industrial site, you're not going to be raising livestock. You're not going to be raising crops. So in my mind, and the potential for damage, as we've seen in Dimock and other places, is so great that the potential in my mind is this will be the greatest killer of what our remaining agricultural industry is in New York State on an exponential basis. It will go so exponentially quick that they'll reap the benefits, the financial benefits of gas drilling. Their land will be ruined. They won't be able to farm it, and they'll leave the region. What does that do to the rest of society that wants to be there? Now, mm-hmm. I am hugely pro-agriculture. You know, I've grown up in these communities. I support agriculture, and I have as a county legislator consistently. And if anything, I'd like to say to the farmers, I'm sorry that our state and federal leaders have failed you, and I will do everything I can as your next state senator to make sure that we raise bulk milk prices so that dairy farming can be profitable again, and try to develop niche markets and do what we can to bring in red meat facilities or creameries or whatnot, so that we can help these, so that we can nurture these industries and let these properties stay as farms, and also look back into some of these conservation easements
yes.
that farmers were looking into prior to the gas run, because there were several farmers that were very interested in this process until mm-hmm. they heard that it would be much more lucrative to go the gas drilling route. Agricultural exemptions have been in society since, I believe, the 1850s. Very long time. It's a form of socialism, essentially. Now, I find it ironic that, you know, we as society have said that agriculture is important to us. Large open spaces are important to us. Forestry exemptions are important to us. You know, we want open space. We want to support agriculture. So we, the smaller landowners, are going to help to essentially pay a little bit more so that we can have this community benefit. So
right.
So one hand, you know, kind of washes the other. And many people now are taking this extremely libertarian stance that have received this social benefit for generations, potentially, that they're purely looking at it from a libertarian view of, don't tell me what I can do with my land, don't get in the way of my profits. And I see that, you know, there's a back end to this. You know, there was this social contract, and now it's certainly being changed. And I really have to question very strongly if certainly the people that have signed leases or already drilling, that they've changed that contract. And we really need to review that, because now you're just an industrial venture like anybody else.
Well, yes, and what we're seeing across the country, certainly what I saw in Dimmick, what I've seen in other parts of the country where they're extracting for coal, mountaintop removal, we're talking about natural gas drilling. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, I just want to say hey.
Oh,
hey,
hi.
Bruce, how
and,
are you?
And please, once I'm...
I'll come inside.
That would be fantastic. Thank
you.
Hi,
good
hello.
You.
Good to see you. So looking across the country, hi. Great to see you. The damage that's being done, and we can talk about water issues, and we need that. That's a very precious and limited resource.
Right.
And without it, we can't function. As a community, the economy will tank. We're talking about food security, right? You're talking about agriculture. Mm. There's so much that's not known about the natural gas drilling.
Right.
And you're supporting a moratorium, the
until,
EPA.
And not just, right, not the short one-year
yeah,
moratorium.
The,
and I don't even want to put a time frame on it, because until 120 days after the
right.
EPA study is done, and I think that's most apropos, have an objective study
right.
of what the effects are on our aquifers and the communities and the environment, and then let's think about this. Because there's a myriad of issues that really surround this that we're not addressing in New York State that are so inappropriate. And it goes,
yeah.
you know, that. But that is the pinnacle. The environmental concerns are paramount. And if by chance they can be proven to be safe, okay, now let's go to phase two. Okay, so you've proven it's going to be safe. Now, how do we regulate this appropriately? How do we
right.
make this a part of our communities that isn't obtrusive if by chance it could actually be, you know, somehow proven to be safe? And we don't have those answers, because currently New York State doesn't even allow for any kind of local zoning control. You know, so we as a community have decided
mm-hmm.
collectively that we want our community to grow in this way, and we have residential areas here and commercial areas
yeah.
here and the like, and here's a forestry area over here and an ag district. There's no control of it. So theoretically, you could have
right.
a wellhead plopped right down in the backyard of a school or in somebody's yard. It's inappropriate. There should be local
right.
zoning control. We're a home rule state. So in so many other things, we the people at local levels of government get to decide our fate, and now they're trying to take that away from us.
Well, and also, to me, this argument about private property rights is ridiculous, because the way that the fracturing is done doesn't stay on somebody's property and has huge impact. Again, there's so much we don't know, but
right.
there's also so much we do know.
Absolutely.
And what we don't know
it's quite imperative that we figure it out before it's too late, before things are destroyed.
We're talking about water.
We're talking about clean air. We're talking about property values. We're talking about roads, infrastructure from town to town.
Which there's guaranteed. First of all, I see it. You know, one of the biggest.
You can tell how I feel about this.
Absolutely.
Right?
But
well,
the...
I support this EPA study and a moratorium that has to be done until
we know. And if you're not willing to put up on that issue and really back it, then you're weak on the issue, because I think that is paramount. And what's the rush? If this is such a great thing, then what's the rush to let's prove it's such a great thing for everyone, not just for the large parcel owner, for the community at large. There are going to be demands on our infrastructure, and currently New York State has no basis for a severance tax or a windfall tax on these gas and oil companies that, if it could be proven safe, how do you account for the infrastructure demands? And if it's not going to be set aside by some kind of tax like that to this huge multi-billion-dollar industry, then how do we – I see it as a huge unfunded state mandate in a state where we have far too many already. And I know firsthand as a county legislator how much gets passed down to local municipalities by the state. They make up this great law. Sounds great, but we're not going to fund it. It's on you. And this is going to be a huge unfunded state mandate if you don't secure those things beforehand. And it's one of those things where if you open Pandora's box without the appropriate knowledge of what's inside there and a net and a foolproof netting that's going to protect you from escape, then where are we? I mean, it's really extremely short-sighted and selfish to the community at large.
So people will say, they've certainly talked to me about it, about the struggling economy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a certain kind of desperation and... For some folks, they see gas drilling as an opportunity. Now, I disagree with this. I understand the sentiment. I live here, after all. I understand it. But to me, it doesn't seem to be a solution to grab at something that we are seeing as destructive. There's so much we don't know about it. And if we lose these vital resources and the infrastructure of our communities, well, forget about it. I mean, things will only get worse. But what do you say as a candidate for the Senate? What do you say to people when they ask you this?
I think there's so many things that need to change in the culture of Albany that can help the economy in New York State. And if we remember why we're in this place, it's because of the lack of appropriate regulation of the financial district and the financial markets, which by today, by the way, they actually passed a sweeping reform that's the largest since the Great Depression in terms of accountability in Wall Street. And that's a huge thing. Now, are we dealing with a poor region? Yes, we are. How do we turn that around? It's going to take time. But this isn't a solution to overall growth. I think it's been proven through many other regions that it's a boom-bust economy. And we need sustainability. We need programs that are going to be for the long term. And we can look kind of at a hint of this we had the Millennium Pipeline come through a couple years ago to actually expand these large transfer pipes that are, you know, potentially going to carry this gas. They ended up hiring very few local workers, if any. There was a small temporary benefit to local motels and some of the campgrounds and some of the restaurants, but it was extremely temporary. These people for the Millennium Pipeline, as well as what I understand to be the case with all of these drilling situations, they bring in their own crews, and they're essentially gypsies. This is what they do. They go from site to site and region to region. And how does that create a sustainable economic gain for a community? And one of the things that I was so frustrated about coming on to the county legislature is that prior to my arrival, the county IDA had actually given a huge tax break to the Millennium Pipeline. To me, there's got to be a mutual benefit when you're giving out those kind of incentives. I will give you that tax break if you can prove to me that over time you're going to produce this much for the community, because that's the whole name of the game. There's a symbiosis between that in public-private partnerships. It can't be a one-way street. And to me, I just don't see where this huge economic boom is going to come from. I think that it's a very temporary thing and at the risk of our environment, our infrastructure. And we can't risk that. And quite honestly, it's pretty easy for me. And I've always considered myself more of a conservationist than an environmentalist, although I'm, you know, certainly being pushed into the other arena, which I'm proud to be. It doesn't, you know, I believe in what I believe in. Mm-hmm. But it is my belief that the responsibility of a public official, an elected public official, is for the greater good. And you cannot prove to me that this is for the greater good. So we better do some serious objective studies to make sure that it is. And then maybe will I have a little more desire to listen to the argument? Potentially then, but I can't worry about the select few large landowners. I have to worry about everyone. And that's what the objective of good government is about.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Dave Sager, for sharing that with me. If you could share with us a bit about, you began to describe your home, why you're raising your two children here, sure. Why you are fighting to protect this region. If you could share your connection
sure.
with us.
Well, I had actually moved to the Jeffersonville area. I'm originally from the Monticello area, but was essentially born and raised in Sullivan County. And in 1999, I'm a chiropractor by trade, and I was practicing in Monticello as an associate. And a friend of mine and my partners at the time, or who I practiced with, who owned a practice in Jeffersonville, was a beloved member of the community. Dr. Barry Bodenstein tragically passed away. And so I had initially come out and provided services free of charge to the widow to help keep the practice going because, there was nothing to sell otherwise. And I immediately fell in love with the community. I mean, we had grown up taking it. George Hahn was a veterinarian that lived in
Jeffersonville. Oh, I've heard about both.
He's a legend.
Of these men.
Legend. What a wonderful man. And I remember as a kid taking our cats and dogs out to Dr. Hahn. Everybody knew George. But I hadn't been there in years, and I just fell in love with the community, and they embraced me. And I knew it was the first day I had gone out there. My wife and I were living in a house, a rented house in Rock Hill at the time, and we were just living together, sinners that we were. But I came home. I said, "Honey, we have to take a ride out there because it's just such a wonderful place, and the people are so warm and genuine, and you have to see this." And we came out there, and we fell in love, and 6 months later, I ended up buying the practice from her and from the widow, and moved out there within 5 months of that. And by the next year, we ended up purchasing the building where the practice is at, right on Main Street, Jeffersonville. And I proposed to my wife on the Calicoon, along the banks of the Calicoon Creek, in the backyard of that place on a rainy day. 2 days, actually, it would be tomorrow on the 26th of June, because it was the day we met.
And
it's a special place.
It is. Okay. Yes, it is. It is a very special place.
Yes.
Well, what I want to ask you, though, since you're a chiropractor by trade and people are coming to you with their discomforts, their pains, their illnesses, trying to feel better, what for you is the connection between what your trade is and what you've learned through working with people in that kind of way and now running for state senator?
Well, I've always tried to help people. And that's what I get out of chiropractic. It's just certainly not fun dealing with insurance companies these days. But the reason you stay in it, because it is a healing art, and you do make a difference in people's lives. I think that I've developed a reasonable reputation at being able to help people, and I enjoy that. And I've enjoyed taking that fight to the county level. I've certainly been an outspoken county legislator, but I've been passionate about fighting the good fight. And I'll take on issues that other people don't necessarily want to take on or are unwilling to take on, because it's the right thing to do. And I don't shrug away from those things, because you can always argue reasonable points and the truth. It's pretty easy to, so I can always sleep with a clear head. And the reason I got into the legislature was for those reasons. I thought there was tremendous dysfunction on the county legislature, and I wanted to try to make a difference. And I think, have I accomplished all that I wanted to do? Certainly not. But I think I've made a dent in things, and I think I've raised awareness throughout the county in terms of certain issues that went on. And I think I have made a difference in a short term. And now I look at Albany, and I see the mess that's going on there, and I see these concerns that directly affect my community. I was seeing things that affected my community in Jeffersonville at a time when I said, okay, now it's important for me to get involved in the county legislature. And now I'm seeing threats to my community, and I see it really, I have to protect my community. I have to protect my family, my children, and my neighbors. And I really see this as that kind of fight, and which is why I'm so passionate about it and why I got into this, because it's not an easy race. And John is a formidable opponent, and he's been there a long time, and he's got a huge war chest. But you know what? He's wrong on these issues, and he's gotten stale. And I think there needs to be some new blood in Albany. He's had plenty of time to correct the ills of Albany and the ethics problems and everything else. And you show me where he's actually accomplished any of those things, because essentially between the Assembly and the Senate, he's been there 20 years. Okay, so show me your body of work to say that you've corrected affected the dysfunction in Albany. In the absence of that, then perhaps you need to step aside and let a new generation of leader come in that really wants to make these changes. And
Well, Dave Sager, thank you so much for speaking with me, for sitting at the kitchen table, for joining me for Trailer Talk for the first time.
Absolutely.
To find out more about David Sager, please go to www.sagerforsenate2010.com. From the kitchen table out on the road, I'm Sabrina Artel. Trailer Talk gratefully acknowledges the Park Foundation, the New York State Council on the Arts, and the Puffin Foundation for the generous support of our work. And special thanks to the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance in Narrowsburg, New York. In addition, it's contributions from people like you that make this project possible. To find out more about the Marcellus Shale Water Project, please go to www.trailertalk.net. Thanks for joining me for Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. The music for the show, Patti Smith, People Have the Power. Trailer Talk is produced by Sabrina Artel. For more information, please visit trailertalk.net. Special thanks to WJFF Radio Catskill and the numerous people who have donated their time, resources, and conversations to make Trailer Talk possible. Thank you all who joined me in these conversations. I'm Sabrina Artel. Safe travels.